Good afternoon and welcome to the Division on Property Tax and Local Government. We do not have a quorum yet, but we can certainly get started with Representative Nornes's bill, House File 326.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't have any testifiers, so I don't need all these chairs either. I appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about House File 326. In talking to one of my communities in my district, Fergus Falls specific, I keep hearing from those that are trying to develop jobs and bring new industry and so forth to our part of the state that our toolbox is empty. And we have really nothing to work with now that Job Z has pretty much exhausted its life. And even when it was alive, it had some issues that didn't work particularly well. So that's my intention here today, is bring forward to this committee an idea that's currently, and Mr. Chair, you're probably well aware of it, but the Border Cities legislation is what we're talking about. And I don't recall how many years ago, I think Maury Lanning was involved with, former Representative Lanning was involved with that. And it benefits communities that are competing or on the edge of the North Dakota border. So from Mortonville to East Grand Forks, and including Moorhead, I think Dilworth and Breckenridge. So what I have done here with my legislation, and this is maybe stretching the intent a little bit, but Fergus Falls is just 25 minutes from North Dakota. We compete on a daily and weekly basis with North Dakota. Kind of a side note, we have a lot of businesses out of Fergus Falls that are currently doing business in North Dakota, particularly out in the oil fields. So it goes both ways. But when we have a business that's looking to expand or locate in our part of the country, that's where it gets down to what can you offer and what are they offering. We have a new industrial park that the city has just purchased for development, and I think it's my intention that would probably be the main emphasis where this legislation would benefit. The emphasis, I guess, would be on finding something that would help replace, again, the Job Z program that we had before. And I guess that's really the story. And I guess I'm looking for this committee to recognize the need to bend that North Dakota property line, or we're pretty hard to move that Red River, but we can, in terms of moving up the Otter Tail River, which empties into the Red River. So if you follow the Otter Tail River upstream, you get to Fergus Falls. So maybe you can look at it that way, and that makes us a border city. So our water gets down there this spring pretty fast. Any questions, members?
Thank you, Representative Ornes.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, in light of the fact that the committee's got more Republicans than Democrats here right now, I just move we adjourn.
Wish we could, but we got a couple more bills up.
Well, I made a motion, though, Mr. Chairman. No, I'm just messing with you.
I was ready to take you up on it, but...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nordis, we're just hazing the new chair a little bit. Just having some fun.
You could pass House File 326.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just having a little fun.
Absolutely. Further questions from members? We do have a quorum now, so Representative Keel, would you like to make a motion for House File 326 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I can do that.
All right, thank you.
Okay,
thank you, Representative Nornes.
You bet.
Looks Looks like we have Representative Johnson with us for House File 722. And Representative Garofalo, would you like to move House File 722 for to be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report?
Mr. Chairman, give me 1 second to see which bill this was.
Mr. Chair, I'll move it.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. I do have one amendment, mostly technicalities to clean things up so the bill will be the way I really would like to have it.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the H0722A2 amendment.
Very good. Representative Johnson, would you like to explain the amendment, or is it just to get it in the form you, to get the bill in the form you wish?
It's just to get the bill in the form that should be in.
Okay. All in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
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 All opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee. This bill arose from a situation that occurred to a National Guard member in my district. He was on his, I believe, his sixth month tour of deployment in the Afghan-Iraq theater as a medevac. Each tour for the medevacs, because they go into hot zones regularly, is just for 6 months time period. But on a sixth mission, he ended up getting injured. And during the sixth mission deployment, he ended up getting injured by an IED, and his property taxes became due while he was gone. And from election ballot issues, we know how well the mail catches up to our deployed personnel. On his last deployment, his property taxes came due, and he is one of the few enlisted or National Guard or Reserve members that does not have a mortgage payment, and he was single. So his property taxes statement did not get to him in time. When he finally returned, his property tax was late and he had penalties and interest. Those penalties and interest ended up being more than what his property taxes were due for both his home and his business. And he ended up having to get a mortgage in order to pay his property taxes because he did not want to lose his home or business. While he was gone, his business is a single-person operation, his business suffered greatly, and he became into very financial dire straits while he was gone. Now, the vast majority of our National Guard and Armed Forces members are outstanding members of our community, and they give great sacrifice to protect our country and our way of life. While they are deployed, their families also suffer, partly because they're not there, and they also suffer financially, because most of the, if you've been in the military, you know that their pay is not the greatest, and while they're gone on deployment, their family income is greatly reduced. This bill gives those members who are deployed 6 months when they return, if they show their provide their DD-214, an opportunity, a 6 months grace period to get caught up on their property taxes should they become due and they don't have a mortgage to pay that. I did have a fiscal note on this bill done, and the note stated that the only area that would possibly lose on it cost money would be the school districts due to the lack of penalties. And I do not feel that with the service that these gentlemen do, that we should penalize them because they're stationed overseas and putting their lives on the lines for our country.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Johnson. It is sad that we have to put this in the statute books. Did you, I suppose, try other ways to help this soldier so that, you know, we didn't have to do this?
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson. Yes, they did a number of different things and looked at a number of different ways to do this. There's statutes where a number of the bills are reduced to help with the situation, but the property tax was not listed in them.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
And thank you, Representative Johnson, for bringing this forth. I really feel for this person who's sacrificed so many times for us and then comes home and we don't have an easy solution. So will there, Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, will there be any reimbursement or any way to have his property taxes reduced so that he's not paying the penalty once we enact this or not?
We looked at doing that, but this bill does not have it on here.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question relating to, is this for just National Guard that are called active duty, or is this all military personnel?
Representative Johnson.
This is just the National Guard and the reserves that if they are called up and deployed overseas.
I'm not sure that that's what it... Oh, that was the amendment. Okay. Sorry, I missed that on the amendment. Okay. Then it also delays the period that when they're due... So it doesn't just not cause any penalties, but actually gives them 6 months longer to pay their taxes.
That is correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Johnson, for bringing this forth. Would it not be simpler just to provide an exemption from penalty or interest while they're on active duty?
Representative Johnson.
That's pretty much what this does. Just gives them, because of the financial, a lot of times the financial situation with these personnel, because they are paid less while they're deployed, and their families do suffer if they have the family situation, it just gives them an extra 6 months to get their financial situation straightened out.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you. So the trigger is when they return and are no longer in actively deployed.
Correct.
That's when the 6 months... in.
Representative Johnson.
Correct, but they do have to provide a copy of their DD-214.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Further questions from members? Do we have any additional public testimony on the House file? Welcome to the division, and please state your name for the record.
My name is Lee Leichentritt. It's L-E-I-C-H-E-N-T-R-I-T-T. I just thought I'd make it easier. I'm with a small nonprofit called Reform Property Taxes, Minnesota, and we think that this is a good bill because it helps the people who serve our country. And that's all I had to say. We support his.
Thank you, Mr. And I apologize if I butcher this. Leichentritt.
Well, Lee works really well. That's why I went through school with one name.
Thank you, Lee.
Thank you for taking the time.
And with that, House File 722 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Thanks, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Representative Lee.
Representative Nelson.
I was going to ask Representative Garofalo, but I see he's had to step out for a second. I believe this is Mr. Anderson, Representative Anderson's first bill before us.
Representative Johnson.
Representative Johnson, yes.
It would be.
No treats.
No treats. In that respect, Representative Johnson, they didn't call me out last week for not bringing treats either, so.
You're on the committee.
Right. Okay, it looks like we have Representative Simon with us, so we can proceed to House File 350.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, do I understand correctly that the plan is to lay the bill over for possible inclusion?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you, members, for your time. House File 350 is a bill that would help, that would perpetuate two very important tools in the toolbox for municipalities, including two that I represent, but many throughout the state, special service districts and housing improvement areas. And just a little bit of history. Before 1996, what used to happen is that individual municipalities would come here to the legislature on bended knee and ask for special treatment by way of specific legislation. And that's the way the world worked around here up until 1996, when the statute was put in place that started a series of extensions of this authority for local units of government to impose these housing improvement areas and the special service districts. And it's been renewed every time it's come before the legislature. And so municipalities across Minnesota have concluded that because it's been renewed and because it's been such a striking success in so many places, that it's time simply to remove the need to come before the legislature every few years. Keeping in mind that, you know, the legislature, as all of you know, is able at any time to revoke, yank, take away authority, or grant it in full. And there's no reason why there can't be a periodic review of this kind of authority. I know that some of you, including me, are fans of sunsets, for example. I think that's a good thing to have in some circumstances. I think the difference here, and the reason why this is sound public policy to enable these local units of government to go forward, is this isn't the kind of program or policy that you'd normally see sunsets with. This isn't a top-down, one-size-fits-all, command-and-control, St. Paul-based solution. This is allowing local governments anyway to do what they will with this important tool. And so I ask for your support. You'll hear some testimony here, I think striking testimony from people who can attest to the success of these tools. And before I say more, I guess I'll just hand it over to Charlie Vanderardi.
Welcome to the division, and please state your name for the record.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Charlie Vanderardi for Metro Cities, an association of 86 members in the 7-county metro area, and I have the pleasure of working with the League of Minnesota Cities on House File 350 in front of you today. As Representative Simon noted, cities have used housing improvement areas to assist condominium and townhome owners who wish to repair and make improvements to the common elements of their buildings. At least 10 cities have used housing improvement areas, which allow homeowners to protect their investment by repairing roofs and siding and other common elements. These homeowners face challenges securing traditional financing through banks, allowing them to work with cities to help with the funding mechanisms for these repairs. In housing improvement areas, at least 50% of homeowners must petition the city to pass an ordinance establishing the housing improvement area, and then these homeowners are then assessed for these improvements and repairs. Over 15 cities across the state have established special service districts, which improve the economic vitality of retail corridors, including downtown shopping districts. The authority for cities to use this tool, as Representative Simon said, is permissive and has worked well since 1996. Additionally, there is accountability built in at the local level. I have officials from two cities today to tell their stories about using housing improvement areas and special service districts, White Bear Lake and the city of Minnetonka. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vanderardi. Do we have any additional public testimony? Welcome to the division, and please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Mark Sather. I'm city manager of White Bear Lake. And I'd like to speak in favor of this bill, and I'd like to do so by telling a little bit of the history of how it's worked in the city of White Bear Lake. Shortly after 1990, we have a downtown that's considered a vital part of our community. White Bear Lake was a freestanding city long before it became a suburb, and the downtown has been a heart of that community. And when we do surveys of our residents to determine their perception of the quality of life, within the top 10 resources within our community, our downtown and the vibrance of its retail centers is listed. It has been for every 4 years for about the last 22 years. Right around 1991, we were dealt with a problem of vacancies exceeding the percent or 41% of the downtown area. And we also had wind that another major store was about to go out of business if we did not improve the retail climate in that area. So the merchants and property owners approached the city and asked for assistance. We got together and supported a special study that brought in a retail consultant that pointed to difficulties in maintaining the downtown in the metropolitan area. And one of them is identify shopping centers as their primary competition and said that if they could not compete with shopping centers, they probably would not exist. Came up with a plan for competition with the shopping centers that had lots of voluntary rules, in a sense, that the merchants and the property owners agreed to. But part of that included things like standardized hours, cooperative marketing, a number of minor improvements in the downtown area, and so forth. Some of the questions came up, but many of those had a price tag, and how would we fund those? And particularly including marketing and identification, signs, and so forth in a downtown area. The idea of a special service district was brought up. We were one of those cities that sought special legislation. It was granted. There were two cities that year. And out of that, it required that the a certain percentage of the property owners petition. And the property owners generally didn't petition if their tenants didn't come along with it. And it also provided that they would determine the amount of the special service district assessment. They had a petition. There's a built-in method of having a reverse referendum, so to speak. Public hearing was held by the city council, and it was approved. But part of that approval required the formation of an organization. In downtown White Bear, they call that Main Street. And that has a board of directors, it has a marketing committee, and several other committees that help draw the merchants together, which I think has, in fact, been as important as the source of revenue that this legislation has authorized, because we have a high degree of cooperation. Since that time, in fact, I can report today that nearly all of the ground-level retail space in our downtown area is occupied. We have one building where a restaurant vacated that a while ago, and the owners are in the process of filling it up. By, I think, just about any measure, it has been highly successful. And it has brought about not only a means of competing with those shopping centers, but drawing our merchants together. The city council has made it very clear that its approval of this levy each year, or actually the first time it came before the city council, everybody was cautious. Our council members, several of the business leaders, and so forth. So it was adopted only for 1 year. And I think the second year they passed the petition around, and it only was adopted for 1 year. After that, because they had, once they reached the point of about 75% of the businesses being assessed, having signed the petition, they felt that it was better to go a longer term. So about that time, they raised the amount of the levy a little bit and had it levied for 2 years. The council has made it clear that without that level of support, it will not approve it. So it truly has the consent of the tax, so to speak. And it has been very successful. Our downtown is very viable. It has grown during this time. Actually, it probably has 40% more retail space than it did at the time the special service district was levied, or for its first created. And as I said before, nearly all that space is occupied at this point. That would be my remarks. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Good afternoon. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Julie Wishnack, and I'll spell that W-I-S-C-H-N-A-C-K. I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Minnetonka. I'm here to tell you about a project in the city that used the Housing Improvement Area legislation. And I do want to get into some of the story, because I think that's the most interesting part and the most stimulating part of why you should probably extend this and not have a sunset. And I'll tell you why in a minute. About 2 years ago, a management company came to the city and was concerned about some of the difficulties that they were having making some improvements to a condominium that they were charged with managing. The association included about 180 units in about three buildings. It's called the Cedar Ridge Complex. The value of the homes are about $75,000 to $100,000, some of the most affordable housing in the city of Minnetonka. The units were built in 1969. Obviously, they were aging. What's really interesting, though, is the association itself didn't actually form until 1979. And as you know from experience, many of these associations were formulated after the project was done, or loosely formulated. And I think we're not that great at predicting some of those capital improvements that were required as part of their long-term effort and investment. The buildings I'm talking about were in desperate need of new roofs. We had a lot of water damage. The boilers needed to be replaced. They needed to comply with the state elevator code. There were garage floor drains draining into the city's sanitary sewer system. There were a lot of costs. It equaled about $700,000 of repair. Many would say, well, why don't they just up their dues and pay for it and deal with it that way, just like everybody else would? And I think they tried to do that, and indeed they had increased their dues over the years, sometimes making their dues about half of their mortgage payment in terms of the amount. And these are people on fixed incomes. These are people who are seniors, and so it was very difficult to kind of accept those dues. Of course, when you and I are needing improvements on homes, and you don't, and maybe it's too large of a repair that you can't do on your own, you would approach a bank. And that's exactly what this association did. Many times approached a bank to do the financing. And obviously, they don't have any assets to attack if the loan were not to be repaid. So they weren't able to obtain a loan conventionally. So the city did agree to establish the housing improvement areas. And we, of course, had to adopt our own policies on how to do that. And we were able to finance these projects at a 4% interest rate over a 15-year period for these condominiums. I think in Minnetonka's case, we're just starting to experience the condominium and townhouse aging phenomena. I think that it's interesting to note that about 70% of those units in Minnetonka are between 25 and 40 years old when those big repair items start to hit the property. I really don't want to scare you about this situation, but I think that it's not always the case for all associations. Some have been properly prepared and have enough resources to do these capital improvements, but that's not always the case. And I think a lot of cities haven't used this legislation for various reasons. Perhaps the city was unable to finance the large amounts of money that we're talking about. Possibly the association wasn't a willing participant. Obviously, you need some agreement from all of the association owners to do these kinds of things. And for many cities, this bulk of housing that's aging is just starting to show up and starting to show the city there are major issues happening. I think that more cities will be looking toward this type of legislation as projects come forward without viable options for financing improvements. I also think that cities will start to see investment in these projects is a positive thing for the city in that it can be a way to maintain affordable housing and keep a vibrant housing stock while still making it affordable for the people who live there. Thank you, Chair. Those are my comments.
Thank you very much. Representative Simon, do you have any other testifiers today?
I think that's it, Mr.
All
Chair.
Right.
I understand this will be laid over. I'm at your mercy for inclusion and possible bill.
That's correct. Let's just check to make sure. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to testify regarding House File 350? Questions from members? Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Simon. I've got a comment first and then have a question. Oftentimes, as demonstrated, these older townhouses or condominium projects may have had a proper mechanism to capitalize their homeowners association fees and funding. Oftentimes they do not, but haven't kept up with inflation and the cost of it. So it does create some problems. And even in my district, I'm aware of some new developments that kind of got caught in the middle of the bubble. Mm-hmm. And the developers were foreclosed, but part of the units were occupied. The letters of credit weren't honored. The bonding that was in place slipped through the fingers of city administrations, and so you even have streets where the wear coats aren't finished. You've got unoccupied units, and then you've got, you know, a minority of people living in the units, and time is ticking by until, you know, the snowplow is ruining the curbs and things like that. So these special service district is perhaps a good idea, and I certainly would support them. Question to our staff people, is there a distinction between subordinate service district and special service district? I've heard some counties in greater Minnesota refer to what I believe are the same thing as subordinate service districts, and I just want to clarify that question, or is anybody aware of that?
Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chair, Representative Herdos, I'm not sure, but I believe those are the same things. I'm not aware of a different mechanism.
Okay.
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Michael is uncrossing his arms.
Yes. It's probably just a corruption of the nomenclature, but...
Mr. Michael, if you could help us out here, please.
This is not my best area of expertise. Deb Dyson would be the one to ask, but subordinate service districts, as I understand it, are slightly different than this. That's a very similar concept, but it comes in the context of towns and areas where you're going to provide additional service under somewhat different rules, whereas special service districts are where you're going to provide a higher level of service, and there's an intergovernmental aspect of the subordinate service districts where townships have a different level of service that's being provided, I believe, in those areas. But we'll check that out and get back to you.
Okay. Representative Hertas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'd like to point out one of the shortcomings of what perhaps could be applied in a special service district as well as a subordinate service district. And I'll just play out a scenario that happened in a greater Minnesota county. There was a desire of some property owners to have a gravel road improved, and they created a special or subordinate service district. And again, using the formula of 50% of the owners, got a majority to set that up. Unfortunately, to the detriment of some of the property owners who had large, long frontages, they were dragged along to pay for the greatest share or burden of an improvement. So I think that legislation needs to kind of safeguard or protect that type of scenario from having kind of a mob rule where a majority who have small frontages drag along somebody to pay for the substantial cost of the whole improvement. So I think that's one scenario. Right. The second thing is with regard to just determining what a special service is, and I hope that we would not allow this to become, and I haven't seen any abuses of it, but imagine using a special service district citywide to carve out service for streetlight collections and fire service and police, that you would establish special service districts to do that. And maybe there's a prohibition against that. I don't know.
Mr. Hines, can you assist with that, please?
Mr. Chair, Representative Herdos, I would just point out that the special service districts only apply to commercial industrial property.
Okay.
So I would think that would minimize some of the concerns you have expressed.
Certainly.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. Representative Runbeck, I believe you asked for recognition.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification, if I could get that, on how tightly drafted is the existing language then, the existing statute, 428? I mean, when we're taking out the repealer, is there a lot left that defines specifically how the district is used? I mean, would it ever be used for creating new housing or, new construction? Or are we talking just existing, established things to be redeveloped and so on?
Yeah, Mr. Van Arnie, do you wish to speak to that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, 428A is about 10, 15 pages long, defining what is allowed under special service districts and housing improvement areas. It doesn't apply to new construction. There's, as Representative Hertas was asking about, veto language in there. In the housing improvement area, it's 45% of the homeowners can veto the housing improvement area creation. It's 35% in the special service district as well. So there are parameters for definitions as well as stewardship of the project and the districts as well after they're created.
Thank you, Mr. Mandarardi. Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. It has been brought to my attention that House File 350 has not yet been moved. Representative Lean.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I will move that House File 350 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report.
Thank you, sir. Any other questions from members? With that, with light, Representative Simon, do you have any closing comments you wish to share with the committee?
No, just thank you for your consideration.
All right.
I appreciate your support later when you mark up your bill.
All right. Thank you, Representative Simon. With lightning speed, Representative Lean renews his motion that House File 350 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. And with that, thank you. House File 904, Representative Murphy. Members may recognize House File 904. Last week, you'll recall Representative Murphy visited us with House File 905. And Councilmember Benson, if I remember correctly, was here to testify on 905, and we thought the guy's on a roll. Let's let him testify on 904 while he's here and not make him drive back down from Proctor again. Representative Nelson, would you please move House File 904 be before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Murphy, welcome back.
Thank you very much. I very much appreciate that you allowed Council Member Benson to testify last week on the need for 904, too. Also, 904 would allow Proctor to have a food and beverage tax of 1%, and for all the reasons that he gave at that time. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate your support. If you do indeed support it.
All right. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify regarding House File 904? Mr. Bagnoli, weren't you just down in Commerce? Didn't we interact there? You're everywhere.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, only the clone. Try to be where needed. And members of the committee, I, as a general matter, my name is Joe Bagnoli. I'm here representing the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, retailers of alcohol in the state of Minnesota. As a general matter, we don't generally comment or take a position on local sales tax, but for the purpose, since we've had a previous conversation in the full tax committee about alcohol taxes, I would just like to point out that if this tax goes on, that we will be double the sales tax in Wisconsin. There's currently a 9.325 state sales tax in Minnesota. This will raise the sales tax in Proctor to 10.325, and if you have a entertainment, it will be 11.325. Just to give you a sense of where that is nationally, it is higher than New York. In Proctor, the sales tax would be higher than New York City, Miami, Chicago, Los Angeles. It would be double the 5% sales tax in Wisconsin. Just by way of an educational purpose, I thought I'd rise just to point that out for the committee's consideration.
Mr. Bagnoli, I thought you said that the Minnesota sales tax was 9.375?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I may have conflated two things. The state sales tax is 6.875. Excuse me, I undervalued it here. 6.875 plus there is a 2.5%, that's how I get to 9.375, 2.5% gross receipts tax, which is essentially the equivalent of a sales tax, just by a different name. So the state sales tax at the retail level that you pay on alcohol is 9.375. This in Proctor, Minnesota, would take it to 10.375, and if you had some sort of amusement, a band, a karaoke machine, you would be at 11.375. For the chair's information, in Minneapolis, the entertainment tax is 3%.
Mr. Bagnoli, great use of the word conflated. Ms. Dalton and then Chairman Chesky. Can you assist here, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think that Mr. Bagnoli is wrong about the entertainment tax. The entertainment tax is only on the admission charge. It is not on the food and beverage sold at the admissions. So there would only be the food and liquor tax on the liquor sold at some entertainment.
So, Ms. Dalton, I pay a cover to get in. I'm paying a tax on the cover if there's an entertainment tax.
On the drinks, right.
And then I buy a drink, and I'm not paying the entertainment tax on the alcohol.
Mr. Chair, that's correct under this bill.
All right. Thank you. Representative Lincheski.
I'm just curious. It was interesting to hear your testimony as it relates to this bill.
a question for Ms. Dalton. How many cities do we have that have food and beverage, roughly? And then entertainment, we have that too in my city. Mm-hmm. There aren't that many of them. But I think the way we have it is just at the Mall of America, I think. So you pay a tax on your, you know, Nickelodeon mm-hmm. rides mm-hmm. and a different tax on your drink, I think. Mm-hmm. I think, and there aren't very many cities with entertainment taxes, I don't think. But I don't know that any of them apply to alcohol. But I stand to be corrected on that one. So,
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I normally carry the tax handbook from the Department of Revenue, which actually lists all the entertainment taxes, and unfortunately it's not in my folder. There are very few entertainment taxes, but I do believe actually the Minneapolis entertainment tax does apply to food and beverages sold at the entertainment location.
It's murkier and murkier and murkier, Representative Lynchesky.
Just as a follow-up, so maybe some bars in Minneapolis, your entertainment tax applies to your food and beverage. How about if you're at the stadium?
Yes.
Then your entertainment tax is on your ticket plus on your drink?
Ms. Dalton?
Just on your drink. Mr. Chair, Representative Lynchesky, I believe that would be correct.
Okay.
And if I remember correctly, that if you're at the Vikings game this coming season, that would not be correct. But if you're at a Twins game this coming season, that would be correct.
Can you drink at the Gophers?
Mr. Chair, I would actually have to go back and look at the language.
All right. All right. Thank you. Representative Hertas.
I just wanted to confirm the Minneapolis tax. Last winter, my wife and I and a couple other couples were visiting the Block E Entertainment District and had
dinner. You would have been the only ones there.
Probably. Well, perhaps, if I've got the block number wrong.
Warehouse District.
Warehouse District, yeah. Okay. I renamed it.
Okay.
But yes, I recall that for six people, the bill was about $360 of dinner and drinks, and 10% plus, it was like 10 point something, ended up being almost another $40, and we kind of went, wow, maybe we won't come back here anymore. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then the following weekend, there was an article about it confirming that it's among the highest in the nation.
That's correct.
Right up there with New York.
I understand it.
Yeah.
Other questions from members, if we could get back to House File 904. Mr. Bagnoli.
Mr. Chair, just to answer Representative Lynchesky's question about how many special taxes, and this conflates the sales tax, which isn't specific. There are some cities, as you know, that just have sales tax on all goods, and then some that just have. So there are 29 cities that have either a sales tax and or a special tax just on alcohol. So there are 29. This would be the 30th. I believe Representative Sundin has 31, and I know that there's another representative that has 32. So those are the best of my knowledge, and I think council would know have the absolute number. That's my knowledge, though.
Thank you, Mr. Baker.
Mr. Chair.
One moment. Representative Runbeck, did you have a question?
I'll pass.
All right, thank you. Representative Hertas.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out we only have 820 cities to go.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Murphy, any closing comments?
I really appreciate Mr. Bagnoli's interest in the people of Proctor. I really appreciate that. And I hope that I will have the opportunity to enjoy a beverage at some time. With him in Proctor. And you know what? That beverage mm-hmm. will be 2% cheaper in Proctor than at Spirit Mountain, just across the highway, than in Duluth, than in Hermantown. But his concern seems to be for the people in Proctor. And I really think that is good. This big city guy coming in and educating us about what will happen in Proctor. I appreciate your consideration of this bill, and if you support it, I appreciate that.
Representative Murphy, just a quick question before we close. Do any of the youth of Proctor participate in 4-H and show animals at, say, the state fair?
Absolutely.
Wonderful for them. And great experience,
horses,
I hear.
And some of them ride horses.
Okay.
And there's all kinds of things going on in Proctor. But, you know, I think that they knew what they were doing when they said they just wanted a 1% food and beverage tax.
All right. Thank you very much. With that, Representative Nelson renews his motion that House File 904, thank you, I knew that, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus, in the division report.
Thank you
very much, Representative Murphy. And we're done, right? We got minutes to do. Representative Runbeck, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from the March 5th, 2013 hearing?
Thank you.
You're listed as having been present.
I was present, and I would move approval of the minutes of March 5th.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
I was going to ask for discussion in Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The multi-talented Representative Garofalo is listed both as present and excused. No, that was possible.
I think in his case it might be.
It might be.
Which would you prefer, present or excused?
I would think present would be the appropriate note.
All right, if we can. The Representative Runbeck moves approval of the minutes as amended. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye opposed. Motion prevails. Representative Keel, you spent some time with the March 6th meeting minutes, did you not? You are listed as present. Representative Hertas, just to be thorough, was listed as absent.
That is.
But only as absent. Representative Keel moves approval of the March 6th, 2013 minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much.